Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. I'm Jay Kelman, Director of Torah Motion, and I want to welcome everybody to our 12th Annual International Conference on Jewish Medical Ethics. May this be a month of Hitchatshut, of Chadesh Yameinu Kekedem, that we should get back to a pre-COVID world, but stronger and better from the experience, despite the horrific impact it's had on really everybody in the world. For the last 11 years, a highlight of the summer for very many has been our Jewish Medical Ethics Conference. Each year we meet a beautiful setting, a wonderful group of participants and speakers, camaraderie, learning. It's really been a beautiful weekend for the last 11 years. Unfortunately, this year we cannot meet in person, but we decided we want to have the conference anyways. And so thank God we're here, and we look forward to being together in person next year. But every cloud has a silver lining. Moving the conference online allows us to have a bigger crowd, allows us to reach people in the world, and we have all the speakers who are planning to come in the summer plus. So I want to welcome all our regulars who are here, and I want to welcome the many people who have not yet attended one of our medical ethics conferences, and it's a pleasure to see you online, and we look forward to a wonderful day of learning. Of course, I want to thank Dr. Laser Friedman, my good friend, who for many years, without his efforts, there wouldn't be any conference. He's the one who year in, year out, puts the whole schedule together, and that's really, I want to thank you, of course, publicly for all the amazing work you do, not just with us, the little tiny work in the community at large and all the work you did. Thank you very much. We look forward to many years in working with each other. The conference has given me an opportunity to meet many wonderful people from around the world. Really, the quality of the participants and the level of learning and the level of just everything has been extremely high. And one of the wonderful couples we met over the years are Arthur and Rochelle Turetsky, who've been coming for the last number of years, and their warmth and their smile and their friendliness. It was really a pleasure to get to know them and to talk to them. Unfortunately, as many of you know, Arthur passed away on Motzei Shabbos, on Motzei Pesach of COVID, and we decided to dedicate the learning this morning in his memory. And I want to invite his wife to say a few words now. Bakasha.
Thank you. Shavua Tov and Chodesh Tov. The Turetsky family is immensely grateful to Jay and Laser for suggesting that this conference be organized La'aliyat Nishmat, my husband, Aharon Shaul Ben Shema, Arthur Turetsky. My husband always enjoyed attending and participating in the conference, and our lives have been enriched by the incredible lectures and wonderful people we have been privileged to meet. During the course of my husband's illness, which reflected 6 short weeks but 45 terrible days and nights, we were recipients of tremendous tovot and chasadim, beyond which we can express, from many of the people we got to know through Torah in Motion. It is clear that the participants in this conference are not just a group of medical professionals, but rather also a group of warm and empathic individuals and families. I give special hakarat ha-tov to Rav Steinberg, who spoke to me Erev Shabbat Mamash from Yerushalayim. In addition, I want to extend my eternal gratitude to the Friedman family and especially to Ari for true chesed shel emet. Laser, please tell Ari that I will never forget what he has done for us. Over the past several weeks, I have been supported and sustained by my dear friend Ilana Aziza. And thank you, Jonathan and Ilana, for sponsoring a shiur in Arthur's memory. This conference reflects the true priorities of my husband's life other than his family, limud ha-Torah, ethical conduct, and dedication to his patients and the practice of medicine. Yehi zichro baruch. Thank you.
Laser, it's all yours.
Thank you, Rochelle, for those very moving words. Thank you, Rabbi Jay, Ilana, and to the staff of Torah in Motion as well for all your help in organizing this conference. I appreciate your comments, but at the end of the day, this was very much a team effort. And as we know from year to year, it works well, and we really appreciate each other's company, and we enjoy the work that we do together. So may God willing, this be something we can continue for many more years. As well, for another thank you, I just want to thank our sponsors. This morning's sessions are sponsored by the Lipsitz family, Lila Nishmas, the members of their extended families who perished Al Kiddush Hashem on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, 5704, 1944. Hashem Yikom Damam. As Rabbi Jay mentioned, this is somewhat bittersweet, this conference, as it is not the usual same experience. It is a highlight for many of us for the summer. It brings us together, and what we enjoy most, and besides, is some things that you've already heard. It's the camaraderie, the friendships that evolve, and really the opportunity to interact with some of the most amazing and respected speakers from all over the world. But we'll have to do with technology for this year. I just want to point out two just housekeeping items. For the physicians or other healthcare workers who would like to have medical credits for this, continuing at medical credits, they have been, we were able to secure 7 hours of credits, 1 hour for each of the sessions. A link will go out following the conference. And for those physicians and healthcare workers who would like it, you would just need to follow the prompts on the link. We always enjoy the question and answer sessions at the conference, and often they bring up issues that we may not have highlighted. It will be a little more technically difficult to do it in this way, just by order of the process. You'll notice that there's a chat box. Please put the chat, your questions in the chat box. The protocol and the intent is to ask the speakers to finish at the 45-minute mark to allow 10 minutes of questions, and then subsequently we will have 5 minutes for coffee refreshments, which is just outside your door. It's on the it's from Torah in Motion, of course, and we will then get resume the at the top of the hour again. If I may share with you a thought as we begin our conference, we were at the junction of where we are at Shavuos, and it reminds me of the question the Magen Avraham, Rav Avraham Gambiner, one of the Nosei Kelim, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, asked such a simple question but a very profound one, which is, why is Shavuot celebrated on the 6th of Sivan when, in fact, the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan? The Gemara tells us that by calculating the days from the time of the Exodus of Mitzrayim until the time that it was given on a Shabbos was 51 days. We also know that the Gemara tells us that Moshe, as the Gemara tells us, Hosif Yom Echad Midato, he added one extra day on his own accord. And then Hashem agreed to that, and the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan. So the true question is, why are we celebrating and commemorating the holiday? In fact, Shavuos becomes the anomaly. It's the only holiday that we have that occurs on a day that did not actually, that the event took place. If we look at Pesach, Purim, Rosh Hashanah, all of the others, they reflect a day that occurred. And I would like to suggest that perhaps that the reason is that Shavuos is really the day that commemorates the day that the concept of Moshe Hosif Yom Echad Midato. In other words, we commemorate the day that Shavuos is the anomaly, that we do not celebrate the day that the Torah was given, but rather the Torah was intended to be given. But we recognize for all subsequent generations that it occurred only because it happened because Moshe added an extra day. It is the power of the Chachamim. It is the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh that essentially we celebrate on Shavuos. So we celebrate it on the 6th to remind us of the anomaly that we are not commemorating the actual day that the Torah was given. And this, I think, is a very important idea as we move through an era of coronavirus, and as we do every year, dealing with the medical and ethical issues that confront our societies and our communities. And we always look and wonder, we were not going to find the answers in the Torah Shebiksav. Rather, we develop it from the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is made up of our Gedolim, who learn, who teach us and enlighten us to be able to carry forward. And this conference really reflects that idea. There is nowhere that we will have the direction on how to deal with the halachic issues, the ethical issues of the coronavirus, the social issues that pertain to it. The tomes that have been written on this coronavirus alone are based on that fundamental idea that we learn from the Torah Shebaal Peh, and we build upon that. May this, in fact, conference be a wonderful source of learning for all of us and a source of chizuk for everyone, and may be refuah shleima for those that are ill, and may they have a refuah shleima in the near future. It gives me really a great pleasure to begin the conference with introducing a wonderful friend and a wonderful colleague and a respected member of the medical ethics community, Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman. Rabbi Reichman is a professor of emergency medicine and professor in the Division of Education and Bioethics at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, where he also teaches medical ethics. He is a musmach. He received his rabbinic ordination from Reitz, from the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary of Yeshiva University. As many of you know, he writes and lectures internationally in the field of Jewish medical ethics. He has been a mentor of the Medical Ethics Society of Yeshiva University, and I can say that we have been a wonderful recipient of his immense wisdom and knowledge in mentoring the young medical students and eventually the young trainees. His research is devoted to the interface of medical history and Jewish law. Rabbi Reichman this morning will speak to us about the history of Psak amidst pandemic, the evolution of medicine, and the constant of halacha. Rabbi Reichman.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Jay and Dr. Laser, for all your continued work throughout these many years, for putting together so many extraordinary conferences and events, in particular from my perspective, the Medical Halacha Conference, of which I've had the schus of being a part of. It's so nice to see you all today. It is the bat mitzvah of the of this organization. This is not the first bar or bat mitzvah which we have attended on Zoom this year. I do want to let you all know that while many people are struggling to go online with video conferencing, Torah in Motion has been way ahead of the curve on this. Torah in Motion has been offering video conferencing for virtually decades, and they continue to provide really extraordinary educational programming. It's a particular schus to speak at a program that's in the memory of Dr. Turetsky. I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Turetsky at the Torah in Motion conference and maintaining a relationship with him throughout this conference and other times that we have crossed paths throughout the years. He's truly an extraordinary man, a compassionate and remarkable physician, the likes of which one rarely sees in a lifetime. He was so enthused by these conferences, and I was enriched by my relationship and my interactions with him. He will be sorely missed. Yehi zichro baruch. I am an ER physician here in New York on the so-called front lines of this corona pandemic. But my objective today is actually to give you a little historical perspective. Yirtzeh Hashem, you'll be hearing from some outstanding world-renowned speakers over the next few hours, dealing with some of the latest issues in corona. What I would like to do is give us a little historical perspective, and I'm going to turn to my PowerPoint presentation at this stage. Okay. These are disclosures. I have no disclosure, and they are learning objectives for today. At the conclusion of this presentation, participants will be able to appreciate how Jewish law has approached the issues raised by pandemics throughout the centuries, and two, place the current coronavirus pandemic in its proper historical perspective. Here is the map from this morning, from the Johns Hopkins site, which probably has the most detailed map following the COVID pandemic. 5,332,000 people are confirmed infected. Global deaths, 342,393. This is a pandemic the likes of which we have not seen in our lifetimes. The last one, which we all know from the media that we have seen, is the Spanish flu in 1918. What is remarkable about this pandemic, and if there's one word that we have all heard multiple times over the course of these past few months, it's the word unprecedented. There are indeed many unprecedented things about this pandemic, and we will mention a few of them, and you will hear more about them later. My focus actually during the course of my discussion is to focus on what is actually precedented. But in the unprecedented aspects of this coronavirus is the response from the halachic world. In the past years, there have been pandemics, which we will presently discuss, and there have been halachic responses to them, most assuredly. However, those responses were published subsequently as part of books, including many other responsa, didn't receive specific treatment and weren't even known about till many years later. Today, given the advent of the internet and rapid communication, we're seeing the unfolding of Piskei Halacha for this particular pandemic in real time, something we have never seen before. We are seeing dedicated volumes to this pandemic. You have in your slide before you, on the left side, Piskei Korona by Herschel Schechter Shlita, and on the right side, Minchas Usher by Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, an entire volume on the Korona. Each of these are hundreds of pages long and are continually expanding and are available in PDF volumes. So we can actually see in real time the Piskei Halacha that are occurring. And of course, you have an outstanding work by Rabbi Dr. Avram Steinberg, who we have the schluss today of hearing as well, and as Torah in Motion has had the schluss of having since the inception of these conferences, who also wrote an extraordinary work, which has been translated into English, available both in English and in Hebrew, really covering the entire gamut of halachic issues that relate to the topic of coronavirus. What I would like to do today is not only briefly take a look at some of the contemporary Piskei Halacha. So on the right side, this is the current situation. This is a picture of me actually in my hazmat gear. But I would like actually to focus or contrast and compare some of these Piskei Halacha that are being rendered today with the Piskei pre-corona, the Pesukim in Halacha, which applied to pandemics and the ravages of disease in the pre-modern era. And here you see the plague physician before you, very similar in concept, covering the body head to toe, including the mask, which we will discuss as well. We begin at the beginning of this corona pandemic, back in March 11th of this year, which seems like an eternity ago. The World Health Organization declares the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic. What is a pandemic? Well, there is a particular definition in the scientific world for the word pandemic. And an epidemic is a widespread disease in a local geographic location. A pandemic is spreads outside to other countries and across the globe. And of course, we know fully well that indeed this is the pandemic. A pandemic in its global reach, which is truly unprecedented to have such a global reach simultaneously, is something which is also remarkable in the world of medical history. But I bring you back thousands of years ago to a passage from the Gemara, a passage from the Gemara Tainus, which also defines pandemic, if you will. And the Gemara Tainus talks about the following halachos. V'chein ir sheyesh ba dever, o mapolos, a city which has dever, a plague. Oso ha'ir mis'ana umasras. That city should fast and should blow the shofar. And there are certain halachos which apply in a state of pandemic. The question is, what is the threshold for that pandemic? So the Gemara likewise has its own definition. Ezehu dever. How do you define plague or epidemic? Ir hamotzia chamesh mios ragli, a city which has the ability to produce 500 foot soldiers. V'yotzu mimena shlosha mesim b'shlosha yomim ze'achar zeh. And three people die, one a day on three consecutive days from this particular disease. Harei zeh dever. This is dever. Pachos mikan ein zeh dever. If it doesn't reach that number, it hasn't crossed the threshold. We don't activate the tfilos and the shofar blowing, which one would have in a situation of dever. Likely in the 21st century, in the midst of this corona pandemic, we have discussed sheltering in place. Coronavirus update, should New York City shelter in place? And there is a debate in many of these areas how we should proceed. Should we stay at home? Should we go out of our homes? Here, likewise, from the Gemara. The Gemara says, in Bava Kama, Tanu Rabbanan Dever Boir Kanes Raglecha. If there's a plague in the city, gather your feet, which means stay at home and don't go outside because there's fear of spread of the disease. And obviously, there's a fundamental difference in their understanding of disease back in the times of antiquity and times of today, but they understood nonetheless times the concept of contagion. Yet others disagreed. Others said one should flee rather than shelter in place. And this is from the Ramah. Od kasu sheyesh livroach min ha'ir kishedever bo'ir. And many people in New York, for example, fled to Florida and to other cities to shelter outside of their homes. Yesh latzeis min ha'ir b'tchila sadever v'lo b'sofo. And he says you should leave the city at the beginning of the plague and not at the end. And in fact, the Ramah himself writes in the introduction to a Sefer Mechir Yain, where he wrote on Purim, that he was in a situation of an epidemic in his city, and he left Krakow and he went to Shidlov. And because he had no food or resources to send Shalach Manos to his father-in-law, he actually wrote this Sefer in lieu of Shalach Manos. Wearing a mask. New York orders residents to wear masks in public. Leave it to the Israelis to design a mask with a remote control that allows you to open the mask to be able to eat while you have your mask on. This is quite a remarkable invention, patent pending, should be out very soon. Have we seen the concept of a mask in previous pandemics, in previous halachic literature? So if you look at Tzoras, Hatzarua, Asher bo nega, hanega bigadav yu frumim, rosho yefarua, ve'al safom ya'ateh. He shall cover over his upper lip. And the Ibn Ezra says, v'atam shelo yazik beruach piv. He shouldn't affect others adversely, harm others, infect others with the disease that he has. And we have halacha, we have in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, in the Bir Halacha, the Chavetz Chaim writes, with respect to fasting in times where cholera was prevalent, Yesh liyatzo lazhiro shelo yelech mipesach beso kol hayom, shouldn't leave his house. Ukishi yetze isa saviv lechatmo upiv chatichat camphor. But if he does leave the house, he should put a piece of camphor. Camphor is actually something like a wax-like substance, which is thought to have properties against the plague. It was even used in the times of the Black Death centuries ago. So you should put something around your mouth and face. And in fact, Chaim Kanievsky was found to be wearing a mask. And they asked him, are you wearing a mask because the government said you should wear a mask? He says, no, I'm wearing a mask because the Chafetz Chaim said I should wear a mask. Coronavirus and isolation. The CDC defines for us what isolation is. I work in the emergency room. I order isolation for many, many patients over the last few months who are suffering from coronavirus. Isolation is used to separate people infected with the virus from people who are not infected. That's the purpose of isolation. Do we have precedent for isolation in rabbinic literature? And indeed, we have precedent, as we said, by Tzaras. Kol yumei asher hanega bo yitma tamehu badad yeshev. He should sit in isolation. And the Das Kanim writes, badad yeshev lefi she'osa choli mitpashet bivnei adam haragilin etzlo. Because of the possibility of contagion. So the tzarua has to sit in isolation. But in the times of pandemic, we also have precedent for isolation. And here I introduce quite an extraordinary work, really a one-of-a-kind work, written in the 17th century, which we'll reference a few times throughout the rest of this presentation. It's written by Abraham Catalano, called Olam Hafuch, World in Upheaval or Overturned World, about his personal experiences in the bubonic plague of 1631 in the ghetto of Padua. He was a physician, and he was one of the four members of the community who was able to write about it and survived it, Baruch Hashem, and the tragedies. He writes the names of all the people who were affected and his personal experiences. It hasn't yet fully been translated into English, but it's quite a remarkable work. So he wrote, "We in the Jewish community began to build our own lazaretto." What's a lazaretto? A lazaretto was a house specifically designed, built for people who were afflicted with the corona, with the coronavirus, with the bubonic plague, for the purpose of keeping them in isolation so they wouldn't infect others. And health officers said that if we do not build our own, the Jews will be required to stay in the city lazaretto. So he reports how, in fact, the Jews built their own lazaretto. Quarantine is something which we have all become familiar with also in the 21st century. Quarantine is different than isolation. Quarantine is used to keep someone who might have been exposed away from others. Likewise, Dr. Avram Catalano writes, the use of quarantine in the ghetto of Padua in the 1630s, about tragic loss of life and the impact that it caused. He goes, then Emmanuel Bono fell ill, and buboes, which is a physical manifestation of bubonic plague, were seen near his ear. Leo Francisi attended to him, and Bono subsequently tragically died. Francisi was then quarantined. Then the wife of Menachem Minkin died, and her household was quarantined. And two other women died, and their households were quarantined. And this is found tragically throughout many, many pages of this daily diary of Avram Catalano. Prayers written for coronavirus pandemic. Today we have specific prayers, specific tefillos, which have been written for corona. One interesting feature which you find in most of the prayers, if not all of them, here you have a prayer from Eretz Yisrael, tefillah la'saras magefas ha-corona mikol ha'olam. Here you have a tefillah from Italy, which was one of the earliest hit and hit very badly in this the coronavirus pandemic. And they include the Pitum HaKtores. They include the ceremony and the order of spices which were used for the incense which was brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. But these are prayers, tefillos, also from plagues throughout the centuries. Here is a plague for Dever in Italy in 1700. This is a plague for cholera, Shelo Tavo, in the 1800s, and Shmir LaMagefa. And other tefillos. And as you see, these tefillos also, this is another one from Italy from 1700s, include Pitum HaKtores, Seder Pitum HaKtores, Hayafel Dever, which is appropriate for the treatment of Dever. Where is this, what's the basis of Ketores, the use of Ketores? The basis actually comes from the Torah itself. There was a plague after the Adas Korach, after the story of Korach and the rebellion of Korach. And how did they stem the plague? It says, "Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, Kaches hamachto v'seinu la'esh mi'al ha'mizbeach, v'sim ketores v'holeich mehera elo'ed v'chaper lo." Moshe Rabbeinu instructed Aaron to do something which was thought to be against halacha: take the ketores out of the Mishkan, bring it into the camp, into the machane. What happened as a result? Vate'otzar hamagefa. The plague ceased. So ever since then, the Ketores has been an integral part of tefillah for the plague. The closing of houses of worship, something that we have all suffered tremendously. New York City mayor to synagogues, closed for coronavirus or be shut down permanently. Chief rabbis order synagogues closed following Israel's new corona regulations. We are only now beginning to open up shuls, but for months, we've been bereft with our loss of ability to daven tefillah b'tzibur. Is this something which transpired in the past? Here you have a sefer from the 1500s, written by Shmuel Yehuda Katznelbogen, who's the son of the Maharam Padua, one of the great gedolim of that generation. And he recounts that he gave a hesped. Hesped Asisi b'chatzer haget, in the courtyard of the ghetto, for Zalman Katz of Mantua. He called about the Knessios Hayusiguri Mipne HaMagefa, because all the shuls were closed as a result of the plague. We have had also circumstances where people want to hear, they want to listen, they want to fulfill the mitzvahs, but they can't leave their homes, and they can't be together. So here you have an example on Purim, which was the very beginnings of the pandemic. Chabad of the Dead Sea reads Megillah for a Jew in quarantine. The Jew is in his house, and the Rav is outside reading him the Megillah. This also we have precedent for, from a remarkable work called Otzer HaChaim by Yaakov Tzahalon, who was a physician in Rome and a very prominent Rav and a tremendous darshan. He gave drushas that the non-Jewish world also attended. They were so popular. And he writes in his Otzer HaChaim, which is a medical book, in his section on fevers, he recounts the situation in during the plague of 1656 in Rome, the bubonic plague, which also took thousands and thousands of lives. And he wrote, since the people were unable to come to the synagogue on Shabbos Parshas Toldos, 2 Kislev 54:17, November 18th, 1656, I, Yaakov Tzahalon, delivered a sermon at the corner of Catalani Street from the window of the home of David Gottini, and the congregation stood in the street below to listen. This is actually a map of the city of Rome from the 1640s. On another occasion, I delivered a sermon on Tuscany Street from the window of the home of Yehuda Gottini, who was a relative of David Gottini. Tzahalon continues to describe the restrictions during that 1656 bubonic plague, which would sound familiar to the modern ear. A lazaretto was established for the infected patients. Lazaretto, as we mentioned briefly above, was a house for those who had been afflicted to prevent the spread of their disease. It was not permitted for anyone to leave their homes except to visit a physician. At designated times, people were allowed to leave to obtain food. At night, no one was allowed out of their homes. And if they were found on the streets, they would be placed in a prison within the ghetto. People could not congregate. This was a much more serious violation if they congregated together. A gallows was built near the gate of the ghetto to punish those who violated this rule. And if you look here, this is actually a picture of the ghetto in Rome. And you see the gate of the ghetto here. And I apologize, you'd have to look closely. It may not be so easily seeable. This is the gallows. This is a picture of the gallows right outside the gate, which was intended to be a reminder if you would do this. that would be your serious punishment. Participation in a minyan. This has become one of the most contentious aspects of the coronavirus pandemic, and still remains so even to this very day in different communities across the globe, and even within communities, different rabbanim, about whether you can create a minyan when different people are on different balconies, or backyard minyanim, or social distancing minyanim. Has there been precedent for this in the past literature? And the answer is, there most certainly was. And here you have a tshuva from Avchaim David Azulai, the Chida. He writes, there were two groups of people. He's writing in the late 1700s, this particular tshuva. You know, I apologize for those who are watching. Someone is trying to mark up the slides as I'm writing. So there is someone out there who is trying to interrupt. I will continue nonetheless, and I hope it will not disturb your ability to see what is being shown to you. Reb Chaim David Azulai wrote, there are two groups of people who wish to join for a minyan, four in one house and six in another. The four were in a lazaretto, which is the isolation house, and could not leave their house, though they could see the people in the other house. Can they join together for a minyan? Amazing, amazing Shaila. So he actually paskened indeed that they could. For a variety of reasons. I'm not sure how the Chida would have paskin today with the balcony minyanim, but that's only speculative. Synagogue and social distancing. Synagogues open for worship under social distancing. Actually, now here in New York, Governor Cuomo has allowed us to open with social distancing. And the social distancing you see here at the Kotel, it's really quite remarkable. This was the Birchas Kohanim, I believe. Is there a precedent to social distancing? So the answer is yes. There indeed is precedent, both informal and formal precedent. So here you have from Avram Catalano, from Olam Hafuch, which we mentioned above, from the 1631 pandemic of bubonic plague. He writes, "Then we decreed that in order to maintain distance between the people during prayer service, the unmarried men would occupy the courtyard of the Ashkenazi synagogue, and those who usually prayed in the Italian synagogue should occupy the women's section." For those of you who have had the opportunity to go to Padua, there is a museum now for the Jewish community, a Jewish museum, a wonderful little museum. That museum is actually housed in the old Ashkenazi synagogue, where this exact tefillah would have taken place. And he also writes how during the times of pandemic, we observed that the attendees at synagogue were few. As the plague progressed and the fatalities increased, there was rarely a minyan, and I include this because of this beautiful poetic phrase that he adds, "Vayhi mikdash me'at mibli ba'ei moed." It was a synagogue of few and desolate. Mikdash me'at is usually referred to the shul itself in a positive sense, that it's a miniature base on mikdash, but here he uses it in the sense mikdash me'at, meaning few actually attend the mikdash. Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the author of the Ksav HaKabbalah, also wanted to minimize attendance. And he wrote in 1857, in the midst of a cholera pandemic, that the women should not attend Yom Kippur service as a result. And this is a letter which some of you may be familiar with, and this is an attempt at formal social distancing. This is a letter which has been disseminated pretty widely over the last month or two. Yeah, and it talks about the cholera pandemic of 1830 and Rabbi Akiva Eiger, one of the greatest gedolim of that time. And he writes, "In my view," and he's talking about davening. What are you supposed to do with davening in the midst of the pandemic? "It is true that gathering in a small space is inappropriate, but it is possible to pray in groups, each one very small, about 15 people. The group should begin with first light, and then should have a designated time to come and pray together." I'm sorry, in another group, each one should have a designated time. And the same groups of 15 for mincha, etc. And he writes, "And they should be careful that more people than the aforementioned quota should not push their way into the shul, perhaps by using a guard from the police to oversee," which is amazing. He wanted to involve the secular authorities even to enforce this rule. Lottery and synagogue attendance. You're all asking now, the shuls are open here in New York for 10 people to go. Which 10 are going to attend? The Kotel is open for Shavuos davening. What do they decide to do? Likras Shavuos, Zeus HaMispalim B'Kotel Marvi Tikava B'Hagrela. In anticipation of Shavuos, the people that enter a lottery, the lottery will be used to decide who will be able to attend davening at the Kotel for Shavuos. Is this something which is precedented in history? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in another letter, wrote about in his capacity as one of the gedolim of that city and part of the Beis Din of Posen, together with the other gedolim of Posen and the other members of the Beis Din, issued guidelines about the Yomim Noraim. And we are coming up to the Yomim Noraim. We ourselves are struggling with how to deal with this. And he suggested that only half the seats in the shul should be occupied, and a lottery should determine who attends on Rosh Hashanah and who attends on Yom Kippur. Military police should guard the entrances and check the tickets. Davening should be limited to 5 hours on Rosh Hashanah, no recitation of piyutim, no additional aliyos to the Torah. Some people would like this, whether it's a pandemic or not a pandemic. The chazan should not prolong the service with tunes and chazanas. So these are things which have been discussed previously in history. We are not alone, so to speak. These notions are not novel. The mezuzah, back in the early days of Corona, there were discussions about kissing the mezuzah. Here you have a magnificent, beautiful mezuzah. And the chief rabbi of David Lau, Shlita, wrote, that you shouldn't kiss the mezuzah because of the fear of contagion. Here he's kissing with his mouth. You shouldn't even kiss it with your hands. Touch it to the surface and bring it to your mouth because of the fear of contagion. Were there issues of mezuzah in previous generations? So here you have Chaim Sha'al from the Chidah writing about a lazaretto, which we mentioned before a few times, Ba'ara Semichta la Lazaretto, Asher Bari Edom. And he was asked, people live in this lazaretto. They are there in isolation. They can't leave unless they recover. They're completely recovered. Rahman al-Tzlan, some of them, many of them tragically did not survive their admission to the lazaretto, but many fortunately did. Do they have to put a mezuzah in this lazaretto if there is none? Especially since they're staying there more than 30 days. So he actually paskin that even though they might be there less than 30 days, by its very definition and nature, the lazaretto is a temporary residence, the diras aroi, one would not be required to put a mezuzah there. But he did require an eruv, in order to be able to carry there on Shabbos. Financial matters are clearly a major issue today. With coronavirus. And here you have from a new sefer, Yad Ber Amim by Rav Avishai Tahareini, who himself wrote tshuvos on issues related to coronavirus. And he wrote, Misha Sachar Bayis V'Nosan Demei Sechiros Mekdomim. And I'm sure this transpired to many people. You paid, you rented an apartment in Eretz Yisrael, for example, or you rented a vacation apartment, and you paid in advance, and now because of the pandemic, you can't inhabit that place. You might even be prevented from traveling there. You can't even go there because of travel restrictions. Do you have to pay? Do you not have to pay? In this particular case, he judged for the lessee, but obviously each case would differ depending on the details of the case. There were likewise financial consequences for the plague in the pre-modern era. This is a tshuva of the Maharam in Padua of Meir Katznelbogen after a plague in Venice in the 16th century. Shaila asked to him, is does a student who contracted a tutor have to continue to pay when all work is stopped during the plague? Likewise, the circumstances are obviously different case to case, but they invoked the halachas of Choshen Mishpat in order to be able to paskin all these shilas very much like they're doing today. This actually isn't particularly financial, but I'm sort of throwing this in there as an interesting comment. I guess you could say it's more a psychological impact of the pandemic. And this is a tshuva written by Chaim Palachi, one of the great Sfardi Gedolei Poskim. And he wrote, and I thank Dr. Ari Greenspan for directing my attention to this source. He wrote about gambling, and he wrote, I decree that any man who is called by the term wise should never play dice or any game anytime, not on Purim and Chol Hamoed, weddings, et cetera, except if he is sick or sickness abounds in his city, like the sickness of cholera and the like. May it stay away from us, Hashem Yirachem. If he is very fearful and his heart is worried about it, and by playing he will find calm and it will distract him from fear, specifically this is permitted to do. And actually just reminds me that that Rav Schechter Shlita in his Pisgei Corona paskins about the listening to music during the times of Corona. And if it's if it has psychological impact and possibly medical impact to soothe people, he would be more makil in terms of allowing people to listen to music. Minyan, the physician and contagion. This is from Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, talking about the physicians themselves, when they come out of the hospital, after coming out of the ICU, after coming out of the ER, after being directly exposed to patients with corona, should they go mitzar for the minion, assuming that it was permissible according to the government to have a minion? He writes, no, physicians should daven by themselves. They should not be part of the minion. And he even tziviti liskorit beit haknesek, they leave no amina rofim. So, because they are spreaders of disease, and should not be being mitzdarif with the minyan. Is this something which has precedent in history? And the answer is yes. Nishmas Kol Chai for Rav in Izmir in the 19th century was asked the same exact shaila. A plague physician, assumedly 19th century, is probably cholera. a plague physician, a physician treating cholera patients, would go treat his cholera patients. Then he'd walk into shul and sit down next to somebody in Davin. And the person went up to the Rav and said, you know, this person's a doctor. He just came from plague patients. Should he be coming to shul? Isn't he going to spread the disease? So the Rav said, you're right. He should not be coming to shul. And he should daven at home. Similar psak. Biker cholim. Vadai, this is from that Sefer Yad Beramim by Rav Avishai Tahareini. But others paskin this also. This is not unique. Chola vadai b'chola corona ein bo mitzvah speaker choli mishum sakonas nefashos shehimis batelos b'makom chashash sakona lemevaker v'neilan yazdaiti ein levaker chola haninso bebidud became sheish basafik nefashos shalom mevaker. So reciprocally, both the person who has corona and the person visiting the patient with corona, neither of them have a mitzvah of bikur cholim because of the potential of contagion, the potential of pikuach nefesh causing harm to others. Is this something which those in the past dealt with? And here you have before you a manual from Berlin in 1750 of the Bikur Cholim Society. Back those days, the Bikur Cholim Societies were not like they are today. Today are the spiritual descendants of these Bikur Cholim societies of the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. But in those days, they had much greater roles because there were no hospitals, or fewer hospitals, and much of the medical care of patients actually took place at home. So they not only visited, provided food, they also provided nursing care, sometimes medical care. And they were an essential part of Jewish societies in the pre-modern era, as they are today, mind you. The Gam Kibalnu Aleinu, this is their manual, Livaker, Kol Chole, Chutzim Yebo Chas Shalom, Ezecholi She'ena Shkiach, Shirohi La'archik Mimenu. And he said, we in the Bikur Cholim Society have accepted upon ourselves to visit all those who are sick, except if they have contagious disease. And he says, Kagon Necholi Shul Shul Me'ayim, which refers to cholera or other the diarrheal illnesses, which obviously are contagious. And he also pull out two other diseases specifically, which they mention in this particular manual that you're putter from Bikur Cholim. And Pakin is one of them, which refers to smallpox. And this is the letter Mem, Mazalin, which is measles. Last year, we in the Jewish community were talking about measles. We thought that was such a major issue, a medical issue for us to deal with. Little did we know. That a year later we'd be dealing with something of much greater consequence. So obviously, if you're writing a Bikur Cholim manual in the 21st century, you would include the coronavirus and some of these other very contagious and potentially fatal viruses. It's interesting, though, that back in those days, this is from Yosef Molcho from the 1700s, but many other people, this was common in those days, that there was Bikur Cholim and people did volunteer. And they took a risk upon themselves if they were compensated accordingly. So he says, except those who were designated and they would receive money and they would receive significant sums. Coming towards the end of life, as we come towards the end of our discussion this morning, this is a tshuva from Rav Schechter Shlita. Unfortunately, many people who passed away were buried not in the locations that they had hoped to be buried. So many people wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Some were able to make it through to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Some were not by virtue of the travel restrictions. Can they be buried in one place temporarily and then be moved again to a different location, to their intended location, either to the family plot or specifically to Eretz Yisrael? And he wrote, a family who is currently unable to use their burial plots in Eretz Yisrael due to the coronavirus may perform a temporary burial in Chutz Laretz. And when the situation permits, the body may be interred and moved to Eretz Yisrael, as is indicated clearly in the Shulchan Aruch. This also was something which was addressed in the pre-modern era. This is a tshuva of the Chassam Sofer, writing in the 1800s, regarding a special cemetery designated for the Jews to bury those who died during the cholera pandemic. Cemetery is not walled or guarded, and the question was: Can they do exhumation of the body, and move it to the cemetery where the rest of the family is buried? And he paskined that it is indeed under certain conditions permitted to do so. And in the city of Bialystok in Poland, there is a cholera cemetery. I don't have a picture of it because it's covered over now. It was established in 1840. The aim contained graves of contagious disease victims. The cemetery was closed in 1892. Mourning practices have taken on a very different meaning and very different manifestations in the 21st century. All of us, whether we have ourselves have lost relatives, we surely know those who have, and certainly most of us have participated in the Zoom Shiva, which is a product of the 21st century. Obviously, there was no Zoom Shiva back in the pre-modern era, but there were discussions about mourning practices during times of pandemic. And the Shulchan Aruch actually says, Yesh omrim b'shas ha-dever ein misadlin. You shouldn't have any avelus practices during the times of dever mishum b'yasusa, because of the fear. And it's interesting, the Adivir Malkiel writes exactly what he believes that fear would be. And he says, it seems that the intention of the law is that at a time of wrath, there are many who die. Thus, if all of the relatives of all those who have died will observe mourning rituals, it will greatly scare the living, because it will be clear that many people have died. And this rings true to a certain extent today. When you see the newspapers, there was one newspaper that had 50 pages of obituaries for people, Rahman al-Islam, who died from corona. Those days, actually, interestingly, they were more fearful about these issues and their impact on their medical health. But clearly, it does psychologically impact to see the devastation of the disease today. And with this, I conclude, just to show that despite the extraordinary advances in medicine, certain things still have not changed. And this was written by a student of the Ramak of Moshe Cordovero and a student of the Ari of Leo de Vidas, who wrote, Magefa hishlucha meito yizbarach ba'avonoseinu yizman lazman. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down a magefa from time to time, a plague, an epidemic, a pandemic from time to time. Asher yomus ba'nar v'zakein tafen ashim b'lisiba. That tragically, young and old, women and children die without our understanding the reasons. And the plague confuses, befuddles the physicians, that they don't really understand the disease. And this is just as true today as it was in the 16th century. Even though we have really advanced in medicine exponentially during the last 500 years since this was written, this statement essentially remains identically the same. So in conclusion, hopefully, Mirtz Hashem, we should see the end of plagues, the ends of pandemic. Those of people who need a refuah should have a refuah. And I hope, Mirtz Hashem, this was a schus for Aaron Shol ben Shama, and Shema, and I'd be happy to open up to any questions, Jay, if there are any questions.
Yeah, I only see one question in the chat box so far. Please add them in, and that was just a question. If you have to sit Shiva a second time when they move the body, I assume that's so, regular, but I'll let you deal with that.
Sure. And I'm sure Rabbi Dr. Steinberg can answer that, but I'll tell you historically, Schefter did not specifically mention that, but this also has historical precedent. Back in the old days, when somebody died, let's say they traveled on a journey for work, and they were 600 miles away from their home, there were no planes to take them back. If someone died at that location, they couldn't transport the body immediately after death because the body would decompose, and that would be prohibitive. So they buried the body in the local location. They waited for the body to decompose. And then they did pinoy atzamos. They did liquid atzamos. They would take just the bones that had remained. They put them in this ossuary called the bone box, and they'd move them to the family cemetery plot. And in fact, the halacha is in Shulchan Aruch that they have to sit a day of shiva during the day of liquid atzamos. So I assume, I don't know, but I assume that that perhaps there would have to be a day of Shiva when the body is moved from whatever location to its final resting place.
Okay, I'll have another question here, and some of these are sent to me only privately, so people can't see them. So of course I'll repeat them. Is there any record of special precautions or provision made for identify high-risk or vulnerable population sectors in the past?
So the answer to that is there was obviously great concern to identify certain populations. The sophisticated identification of today doesn't have a direct antecedent in the past, but there's no question. So, for example, there was concern about the ghettos, for example, where there was closed quarters and there was potential of high spread. So there was fear of spread there, even though, and this is for another discussion, in many of these plagues, the Jews suffered less than their non-Jewish peers, and which led to the belief that the Jews were actually responsible for spreading the plague, poisoning the wells. I'm sure you all know this. This is a very long history. And by the way, this anti-Semitic tone persists even today with the coronavirus pandemic, those claiming that the Jews are responsible for its spread as well.
Okay, one other question I see here. Okay, in places where minyanim are being conducted with proper physical distancing, are doctors that work in hospitals able to attend? Or maybe should they attend is perhaps a better question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, again, this is for the posek, but it doesn't seem reasonable to for me to come out of the ER and walk into even a socially distancing minyan in the height of the pandemic, for sure. Although technically, from the technical perspective, social distancing does help and wearing a mask does help. It's probably a judgment call, but it's probably better to be safe to protect others.
Okay, it's 9:56. We want to give people a 4 or 5 minute break before we start. Dr. Steinberg, a pleasure to see you. We'll make you a co-host and want to share your screen. I don't know what the issue was with the thing. Maybe somebody accidentally hit something, but we'll try to clear that up. The sources will be posted on our website. The PowerPoint will post it all the sources will be posted. Please, God, it's being recorded. You can watch it afterwards, listen to it. So everybody go get a cup of coffee and stretch, and we'll meet in 4 minutes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi Eddy. Always a pleasure. And
thank you so much.
Incredibly insightful. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Really have a wonderful day, everybody.
I know you're off to work now. So really, thank you very much for coming, as always. And we look forward to seeing you next year live in action.
Mirz Hashem. Very much the same. Have a great day, everybody. Okay. A good chodesh.
Okay. We'll see everybody.